With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
This podcast is brought to you by AcapiMatch. AcapiMatch is a boutique matchmaking service that helps exceptional singles find meaningful connections and relationships. To learn more about our matchmaking services, online dating makeovers and takeovers, or to enroll in an upcoming group coaching intensive, go to AcapiMatch.com. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. I'm your host, Matchmaker Maria. For over a decade, I have combined four generations of family matchmaking tradition with modern relationship psychology, behavioral science, and dating trends. With this unique expertise, I answer your dating and relationship questions on the podcast and online. If you're not already following me, you can find me on Instagram. I'm at Matchmaker Maria. And hey, while you're at it, follow the podcast on there. It's Ask a Matchmaker, and also subscribe to the podcast. This way, you get the new episodes every Wednesday when they drop. This week's topic is about navigating fertility. My guests are Layla Bilali and Elizabeth Lipov. Layla founded her fertility consulting and nursing services business, Fertility Together, to bridge the gap between a clinic and patient and fertility treatment and personalized care. She believes that a nurturing, knowledgeable partner can make all the difference in each individual's unique path to fertility, whether they're just curious about where they stand and what their options are, freezing their eggs, or going all the way with IVF. Layla provides personalization, continuity of care, proper education, and endless encouragement. Joining us is Elizabeth Lipov, who works at a healthcare tech startup that services fertility patients across the country. She worked at a large fertility clinic in New York City for over 4 years as an IVF coordinator. She's worked with couples, single women, and oncology patients who were preserving their fertility prior to treatment start. Ladies, welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Hi.
Okay, so navigating fertility, I have like so many questions for this episode. So first off, I want to ask, like, how did you get into this? Like, what kind of education do you need? You know, like, my first thoughts are like, are they OBGYNs? Like, what does it take to get into the fertility part of healthcare?
Yeah, so the physicians that we work for are OBGYNs first. And then after they complete their OBGYN residency, they go through a reproductive endocrinology, which is a fertility specialist. They go through their reproductive endocrinology fellowship. So they're all OBGYN trained first. And then for me as a nurse, as a nurse, you can work in any field. They just train you on the spot. So I worked in pediatrics before this, and now I've worked in fertility for almost 8 years.
Wow. And where are you? So this is Layla speaking. Where are you based out of, Layla?
I am based out of the tri-state area. I still work at a private fertility clinic in New York City. And then I service clients all over the country. I've even had clients in Dubai. So a lot of my virtual services are all over, but locally it's the New York City area.
Are there, since you just mentioned Dubai, like, are there any laws when it comes to like state by state or international when it comes to these certain, you know, these sort of healthcare procedures?
Yeah, actually, one of the biggest things that we see our international clients for at the clinics here in the States is sex selection. So when you're choosing which sex of embryo you want to put in, male or female, a lot of places in the Middle East and even places in Europe don't allow for sex selection. So a lot of people come to the States for IVF for that, if they're doing any sort of family balancing and selecting the sex of the embryo they would like to use.
I had no idea that that was an option. Like, right now you're blowing my mind. What?
Yeah. And it's illegal in a lot of places. And like, for example, in Germany, you can't even test the embryos, much less select the sex. You can't test them at all. You can't do any sort of testing ahead of time. So...
Well, I can understand. I mean, that just is also, like, I think, historical precedence for that region. But yeah, you know, okay, that's, wow, I did not know that. And Lisa, how about you? Where are you based out of, and what is your background?
So I'm also based out of New York. I kind of got into the fertility field right out of college. I was looking for a job. I always knew I wanted to work in healthcare. I wasn't always completely sure where I wanted to be. And this, you know, I found a job at a private fertility clinic in New York where Layla and I met, and I kind of fell in love with the field.
And you've all been working in that field or adjacent to that field since then?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about, you know, you just talked about testing. Are there like a host of other tests that happen in the United States that might not happen in other countries?
The standard fertility testing that we do is kind of universal. It's just that the specifics when it comes to selection of embryos and things like that, that might be different worldwide. And again, you know, like you said, it's a historical thing, whether a country is based on religious laws, things like that. So typically here, for the IVF process, before you transfer an embryo that you've made back into the uterus, we typically test it to make sure that it's chromosomally normal. So 46XX is a female, 46XY is a normal male, and that's what we're checking for before putting it back into the uterus to ensure that it's a normal fetus eventually, hopefully. But the testing that we can do here, it's not legal in a couple of places in the Middle East, a couple of places in Europe, and I'm sure other places in the world. And a lot of people do come and do IVF for sex selection, and they call it family balancing is the technical term. Let's say you have two girls and you want a boy, so you come and make embryos, and then whichever ones are male after the chromosomal testing are the ones that you would, you know, end up using. But the universal testing, like the blood work and the radiology exams, ultrasounds, things like that, are pretty much
pretty standard. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me more about the people that, you know, you see at your treatment center.
We see it, you know, New York City kind of is, you know, not to be corny, but it is really a melting pot. So we see all sorts of different cultures, religions, and those kinds of things do affect, you know, the ages. So yes, the average patient that we see is somewhere between 35 and 42 in New York and in other big cities where fertility clinics thrive, Miami, Chicago, LA, San Francisco. Females are very career oriented. They're not getting married until later. They're not thinking about having kids until later. Even if they're doing single mom by choice, they're waiting until they're kind of, you know, set in their careers and they're financially stable before doing so. So age-wise, our average patient is somewhere between 35 and 42. But going back to religious and cultural things, we have the Orthodox Jewish population we see as young as, you know, 20, 21. We have Mormon.
Why would you see someone at that age?
It could be all sorts of things. A lot of the genetic testing that we do is in cultures like that. If there are a lot of, not necessarily consanguineous, meaning that they're related, but if there are offshoots of their relations, we want to make sure that we're checking their genetics to ensure that we're not going to duplicate any, you know, severe illnesses. So certain cultures have a certain set of genetics that we see over and over again. For example, in the Jewish population, there's a whole list of them that we test for that are very common in that population.
So, do people ever come before they get married?
They do, yeah. They do, before they even get engaged sometimes. That's part of their, dating partnership workup, is getting their genetic testing done to make sure that they're not carriers of the same illnesses, in which case it would be an issue for, having children. But wouldn't it,
how soon could you test for, these sort of genes that you might have? Because, like, for instance, I'm Greek, right? And mm-hmm. in my community, there is Mediterranean anemia. In fact, I think I remember when I was pregnant in New York, every time I filled out a form at my OBGYN, it would be like, it would say like Asian, Black, and then it would say Jewish, Greek. Like, it was like broken, like everything else was like these big globs, and like Jewish and Greek were broken down. And it's because of, just like you said, there are certain genetic things that are with each region. And mm-hmm. like the thing that I've understood is that, like, for instance, if I had Mediterranean anemia, I would know that I would have, certain deficiencies that I would have to manage my whole life. Mm-hmm. If I had that, I would go out of my way not to date someone who also has that. Even if in a dominant, right? I wouldn't know recessive unless I get them tested, right? But how quickly could someone, would they even come to you? Would they just go get a genetic test in that community to know these things?
You can get the blood work done through any provider can prescribe it. It really doesn't have to be a fertility clinic. Mm-hmm. But it really just depends on which panel you're looking to do. Certain panels can only be done at certain clinics or OBGYNs that have a partnership with that company that runs that panel, and then others you can even have your PCP give you the lab order for it and have your blood drawn
and then use that to date people.
Yeah, you'll see if I'm a carrier for the same thing as this person, so every pregnancy would be a 1 in 4 chance that my child would have this recessive disorder. I may not go further with that, unless, of course, if you have the means to and you want to go through the IVF process, you can always bypass that. And
so if you did IVF, if you were with a partner where you both have, let's say, a recessive gene, if you did IVF, then you could select which embryo doesn't have?
Correct. They build a probe.
I did not know this. I don't know anything about this. So it's so interesting to, I thought you just make the embryos and then you just shove them up the vagina and that's the end of the day. It's like whatever sticks. But you're telling me that there's all these tests before now. And I'm like,
You can do it untested. And a lot of clinics, depending on your age and background and things like that, will do untested embryos. But you do have the option. Or let's say you do, you fall in love with someone and you're both carriers of cystic fibrosis, which is obviously something, very detrimental. And so you guys can build a probe, and that probe will check each embryo to see if that embryo has cystic fibrosis or not prior to using it.
Would health insurance cover these things, or is this all out of pocket?
It depends on your insurance. Yeah, Lisa would know more about this. I'll let you take that part, Lisa.
Yeah, so it depends. Some insurances will cover, you'll have a lifetime maximum, they'll cover that amount, or you'll have a certain amount of rounds that you can do that they will cover. Some insurances will, cover if there's a certain genetic disorder and there is a health reason for doing this. So it really depends on your plan, and patients can call their insurance to see exactly the full breakdown. Some clinics will help them do that investigation. So unfortunately, there's no direct answer, and it's pretty much it depends on your plan. But there are insurances that will cover it.
Let's say I had a recessive gene, like you just mentioned, cystic fibrosis, right? And let's mm-hmm. say my partner, we know that he has that too. Do you think, is there like a social worker in the office or in most fertility treatments who could help me navigate, like, if we want to avoid something that's going to be very hard to, you just said detrimental, especially in someone's financial future. Would a social worker then talk on your behalf to you know, I'm thinking about the heavy lifting that comes before mm-hmm. doing this, right?
Right, the logistics, and Lisa, you've worked with that part of it, so.
Do you mean in terms of insurance or just like for the couple in general?
Both.
So for insurance, I mean, it's all, you know, the office would have to submit on the patient's behalf of their full medical history, their reasoning for doing this, and then they will determine if they're eligible for coverage or not. But a lot of clinics will give you kind of, like, I was an IVF coordinator, so I was kind of the person who planned everything out with the patient in terms of their schedule, but also kind of walking them through the process and kind of, you know, almost hand-holding sometimes because, you know, it is a very difficult process and it's very emotional, and sometimes you kind of need that extra support if you don't want to go out and, you know, discuss it with your family and friends. It's nice to have kind of that unbiased person who has kind of the knowledge of what you're going through and can be that support for you.
You know, you mentioned the kinds of patients that you have. Talk to me a little bit more about that. So you obviously have people that are married and are family planning. Mm-hmm. Do you have unmarried couples people who are not interested in getting married but are interested in IVF? And I'd love to learn more about, you know, single women who want to do it on their own. Mm-hmm. And oncology patients, of course, too. So tell me more about your different patients that you help.
So some women choose to be single mothers by choice. And, you know, I feel like it's becoming more common if, you know, by a certain age, some people will say, you know, by a certain age, if I don't meet my person, I know I want to be a mother, and they will use donor sperm banks and buy donor sperm transferred into their clinic, and they will use that sperm vial in order to create their embryos and go through with the process. I feel like in bigger cities, you know, that's, I wouldn't say that's an uncommon thing.
Yeah. You don't have to do IVF, by the way. For single mom by choice, you can do an IUI as well. It's called an intrauterine insemination, where they basically take a catheter, put the donor sperm in the catheter, and they insert it directly into your uterus.
When you're ovulating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you don't have to do IVF for that.
Do you have to, can you do this at home, or do you have to go into a clinic?
So they do have kits now. Back in the day, they used to use the slang term turkey basting.
Okay.
That's actually what they used to refer to it as. And now they have legitimate kits. A lot of fertility companies have made and they sell legitimate kits for this that you can do at home. It's obviously a little bit more blind at home without the ultrasound guidance and things like that that your clinic will do, but you can do it at home, and the success rate isn't as low as you would think it is. It works.
Do you think, do you find yourselves when a woman, I have had a few friends become mothers by choice. And actually, if you ask me for my personal opinion, I think it's a wonderful decision. It really takes away the stress of like, oh God, I have to find a partner by this time, and just like, you know, take anyone. And it's like, well, no, you have to make sure this is a really good person, because you're going to, even if it doesn't work out, you still have to talk to them for at least the next 18 years. So this is a really important relationship you're going to have with this person. Don't go into it lightly. And in fact, you know, as a dating professional, one of the things I'm always reminding women, if they are thinking about going at it alone, is like, you know, if you go at it alone, you become a single mom. You know, suddenly there is this group of single fathers who only want to date single moms that now you will have access to that you just did not have access to before. So, you know, that's like definitely a pro. But what are the questions that you hear from women who are interested in doing it by themselves? Like, what questions do they have when they come in?
I think a big one is like, how do I choose my donor? And like, what do I do for that? I don't know, Layla, what do you hear?
The big question that we get is, let's say everything works out and I have my kids, do I tell them that I used a sperm donor? Who do I tell them is their father? Who do I tell them that I used? And there are, you know, therapists that specialize in this, and they'll help you navigate. Do you tell them? When do you tell them? You know, at what age is appropriate to tell them? And if you used a non-anonymous donor, a donor that is willing to be found later on, let's say my kid wants to find out who the donor sperm was. And some of these donors now, you can choose to be non-anonymous and they can go and find out who you are.
Can the mom find out, like, who the donor is?
Yeah. There's fewer of those. Most of them are anonymous. But okay. Now there's the option.
I'm just, like, picturing a woman finding out who her donor is and, like, Instagram stalking him in her second trimester. Not necessarily because she wants to be with him. No. Just being like, you know.
Right.
Okay, then, this is the sperm I have in me. Got it. You know. These are the other 23 chromosomes of my child.
Yeah. Absolutely. So
also, when they're choosing the sperm donor, most of these banks now, they have, like, you know, full websites, and all of these donors have their own profiles. Majority of them, I would say, are probably baby pictures, but they have, like, their biography, their interest, their background, their age, you know, kind of all of this information that you would want to know is on there. So that's how they choose their sperm.
But how much of that is, so when you say baby photos, you're talking about, like, baby photos, or do you think, like, they have, like, a photo of the man when he was, like, 5 or 6?
They're more like toddler photos.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, they're more like toddler to maybe, like, I would say max age 10.
And what is the advice here? Like, do you choose someone who looks like you? Do you choose someone who's the same race as you? Like, what's the advice that's being given to women who are thinking about doing it alone?
The clinical advice that I would add, that I do always give, is go based on the physical, not, you know, what school they've listed, like what college they graduated from, what career they're in. Those kinds of things are not DNA backed. So I don't know if someone went to Harvard because they have legacy there, or, you know, if it was actually based on merit. You don't know those things, but I can just put on there that I graduated from Harvard. So what?
Oh gosh, there's no verification? There's no, like, LinkedIn double opt-in here?
No, there isn't. And again, those things aren't really backed by DNA. What's backed by DNA is my kid going to have brown hair, brown eyes? Is my kid going to have dark skin, light skin?
Is there a place in the profiles where people can talk about, like, their temperament at least? Because that is genetic.
Yeah, they do. There is a place for that. And also what's kind of cool is that the staff at the sperm bank, at some of these places, they have a whole thing that the staff fills out. So they do first impressions of the guy when he walks in. And they write out, you know, my first impression of him, and he was dressed like this. They do celebrity lookalikes. So it's pretty, pretty extensive.
Wow. I like the first, I would base it all on first impression. I want to know, like, I want to see the nurse or the doctor who wrote, like, don't do this. Don't do it with this guy.
Red flag.
Okay. So then how about, do couples come in that, so when a couple comes in that's, let's say, dating or married, how soon can they come in?
I think, you know, whenever they're ready. I also think, you know, a lot of people, like what Layla mentioned before, is people do choose to start families a little bit later nowadays. And a lot of people come in for embryo freezing, for fertility preservation. So let's say they're not ready to have kids just yet, but they know they will be a few years down the line, but they may think they'll be, like, older by, you know, a little bit older by then and have better chances now. So they'll freeze their embryos and use them later on.
When you interact with women who want to do that, do you feel like they're excited? Like, is this just something to check off the list, or is there an excitement to get rid of, first of all, is there a pressure release? And then do they experience that after it happens?
I think there's definitely a pressure release because, you know, like how you said before, there's so much pressure to, like, find your person. And with women who decide to freeze their eggs, for example, it's kind of, oh, like, part of this pressure is being taken off for me. It's kind of, you know, a little bit of a security blanket for the future of starting a family.
Yeah.
It's funny. When I asked that question, you both aggressively nodded yes. And I just want, I know people can't see you, but I just need them to know that that was something that I got to witness. Go ahead, Layla. What were you going to say?
I just think, and obviously, you know, this is your domain, so you could probably speak to this better, but I feel like when you're dating, and especially if you are in the phase of life where you're thinking about children, you might be kind of tunnel vision in dating of, is this someone that I can have kids with? And you're kind of like stacking them up for strictly baby reasons versus all the other reasons that you would date someone and be partners with someone. So I feel like taking that pressure off and saying, okay, I have, you know, my eggs frozen. If I ever need to use them, like, that's not what I need to focus on while I'm navigating the dating world.
Have you heard of any creative ways that women may negotiate with their employer for that to be covered?
So I've seen people who have encouraged their businesses to roll out some sort of fertility coverage. And they're the ones that kind of like push for it. And then eventually the company starts doing it. But it's mostly either they're a really progressive company like the Facebooks and Googles that cover egg freezing, or they're the bigger banks and things like that, that because of the recent backlash, as much as I hate to say it, they're kind of making up for lost time of all the backlash that they've had and all the, bad press.
What backlash?
In terms of not treating females the same in the workplace. And so I think bigger banks and bigger corporations like that get hit really hard with those kinds of accusations. And so I think they're really coming around to having better fertility coverage and maternal and postpartum care for their female employees, even for their male employees. The paternal stuff, paternity leave even, mm-hmm. things like that have changed drastically.
What is, if someone were to do out of pocket, what are the costs of egg freezing or IVF?
I think it depends, on the clinic you go to, but a rough estimate between like egg freezing or like a full IVF cycle with the genetic testing, I would say is probably somewhere from like $9,000 to around $13,000 per cycle.
If I wanted to freeze my eggs without IVF, it would still be $9,000 to $13,000?
Well, no, it's either you do egg freezing or you do the embryo freezing and like genetic testing.
Okay.
So egg freezing will be a little bit cheaper just because, it kind of stops at that point of retrieval. They freeze your eggs. If it's IVF, they have to create the embryo and, biopsy it to do the testing, freeze it, and then in the future you can use it for a transfer if it's, chromosomally normal or a healthy embryo. So I would say a range from like 9 to 13, and then medications are a separate cost. It depends on the dosage that the woman would need to use, but that's, I would say, a range of around 4,000 to 6,000 a cycle.
How long does a cycle last? Is that a month?
No. So the stimulation itself is about, 10 to 12 days on average. Some women will go a few days less. Some women will go a few days more. Lately, you can definitely attest more to that.
Yeah. So it's typically 8 to 12 days of medications for the egg retrieval mm-hmm. process. So 8 to 10 days of injectable medications. That's the other thing people don't realize. You will be injecting yourself on a daily basis for about 8 to 12 days. And then the egg retrieval procedure itself, which is a surgical procedure that you're completely asleep for about 20 minutes. And then that's it. So I would say like a 2 to 3 week process, depending on how quickly or how slowly your body responds to the medications.
What advice would you give to someone who is interested in looking at a fertility clinic? Like, what are the right questions they should be asking whatever treatment center they go to make sure that it's, a reputable service, ethically sound, and all that stuff?
Yeah, and this is one of the things that I do with my business, is that I help clients navigate who to go to based on their personality types. Do you need TLC? Do you care about bedside manner? Do you just want the hard stats? And there are several websites, several accredited websites. So SART, S as in Sam, A-R-T, as in train. SART is the database that gives all of the different statistical outcomes of the fertility clinics nationwide. So you can always go on there and check out their stats. The lab, The embryology lab is super important for any sort of IVF procedure that you'll be doing, embryos, eggs, sperm, that kind of thing. If you're freezing, if you're preserving your fertility, the lab is super important. But yeah, there are several accredited websites that you can check out. And there's people like me who you can use to kind of hold your hand through the process. Who do I go to? When do I go? If I'm trying, how long do I have to wait before I go? And which tests should I have done? And then once you have your answer, again, people like me will guide you through what's the best treatment for you. So it's kind of like a supplement to your medical care. One of the things that I think gets missed is that a lot of people go into things like egg freezing, and it's kind of sold as a, one and done security blanket, done. You froze your eggs, you're great. But you have to tell patients the pros and the cons of egg freezing, and a lot of clinics unfortunately don't. It's kind of like a don't ask, don't tell, as much as I hate to say it. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for egg freezing. I think if you have the means to do it, you should absolutely do it. You'll never regret doing it. That's not what I'm saying. I just think that you should be, getting some supplemental care outside of your fertility clinic to kind of walk you through the pros and the cons of all of this.
I think Layla nailed it, honestly. I don't think a patient will ever regret it, but I definitely think that they should know what the pros and cons are of doing it.
I'd love to know what is the most rewarding part of your job. This is, obviously a very difficult decision sometimes for some people to do, or a frustrating experience for many people. But I'd love to know, what do you find rewarding about this? What keeps you going?
I think for me, I genuinely feel like these babies are all my babies. And I have my own children, but anytime that our patients send us a holiday card or, send us their pictures after delivery and watching their children grow up, that's the most rewarding, is just seeing how happy they are and, all the different paths that they take to get there. Especially if you have someone we've had people that have cycled with us for 3 or 4 years for one child. And so seeing their struggle and then seeing them with their baby is really, really gratifying. One of my longest line of holiday cards comes from one of my first patients who actually was a single mom by choice. She ended up doing an IUI. She didn't do IVF, but she had twins, spontaneous twins. Via the IUI procedure using donor sperm, and her kids are now 7, and she still sends me the holiday card every year, and it's just, I love it. It makes me so happy.
I love that. How about you, Lisa? What's rewarding about what you do?
I think it's, kind of being able to help people, because I think they're in such a vulnerable state in their life. Either they're preserving their fertility or they, for unexplained reasons, cannot get pregnant on their own. And it's being there for their process and being a support system for them. And, seeing the aftermath of it, of the pictures and seeing their kids grow up. Like, I have a few patients that I keep in touch with. They ask for my phone number and they will text me for the holidays and will send me pictures of their kids, or I even got to meet some of, my patients' kids, and it's just so rewarding to see them grow up. It's definitely an emotional journey, but it's a very rewarding one to see.
That is excellent. Coming into this, I didn't know a lot about this, and what I was thinking about this morning before recording is that I feel like most people, and tell me if I'm wrong, okay, but I feel like most people don't know anything about fertility unless they have to experience it personally. Again, both women are currently furiously nodding yes. And this is why I wanted to kind of, I don't want you to think I'm dumb, but, I want to come in asking questions that I think some people might be wondering. Like, I don't know anything about IVF because I was very lucky that I didn't, that was not something that we needed, but I knew that if I had questions, I did not know that people like Layla, who's a navigator, existed. And now that I know that, now I know who to refer people to, because I think that's also, really daunting, in that whole, where do you begin? you know?
Yeah, and the average person doesn't know anything about fertility. The average person doesn't even know anything about their periods. They don't know when their cycle begins, when it ends, how to look for ovulation. The average person does not know any of these things. We're not taught these things. There's no education there, you know, and I think that that's one of the biggest issues. And honestly, every time I meet someone and I tell them what I do, they're like, oh, I wish I knew about you before I went through IVF. So unfortunately, again, they don't know that these things exist and they don't have the basic education about their own, you know, menstrual cycles, much less the fertility process. And I think we spend so much of our younger lives trying not to get pregnant and then think that it's, you know, it must be so easy if we have to try so hard not to get pregnant. It must be so easy that when we do try, it's just going to happen. So I think there's that misconception as well.
I think one of the things people don't talk about enough, and hopefully, you know, it's a smaller pool of women or men that have to go through this, or oncology patients. And I think there have been like statistics that not many doctors or oncologists will talk about fertility preservation before they go through their treatment, because after that, unfortunately, many of them can do not produce eggs or sperm anymore. So, you know, it's very important if a patient has that diagnosis of cancer to have that conversation of, is it safe to do fertility preservation before starting a cancer treatment?
Well, if someone were to do this, are they also given the tools of how to communicate it to future partners? Or is that like left on to their own figuring it out?
In what sense?
Like, let's say you are single and you are a cancer survivor. I'm not going to say like a specific cancer, just generally, right? And you've been told, you know, please, you know, do preserve some eggs so that you have the opportunity to become a parent one day. Are there tools in this process that are given to, like, you know, if when you start dating, how do you, is this a conversation that you need to have with your future partner? Like, hey, we're going to have to do IVF because I survived cancer.
I mean,
we don't provide it, but that's an excellent point. And I think that that's something that should definitely be a part of your dating spiel, because, you know, children are a deal breaker for a lot of people. So I think that's something you should, unfortunately, we don't coach on that, but that's an excellent point. And I think that that's something you should disclose to any potential, you know, life partners.
I'm thinking right now on my, with my little dating professional hat, like, I would disclose this when you're ready to disclose that you are a cancer survivor, like that. And to me, I've always noticed that anytime there's like a hard topic, you know, environment is everything, and doing those conversations on a walk where you're not facing them eye to eye is just a lot easier. But also, just as I hate to say it, but the way Layla said it, you make it part of your spiel. Like, you just, it's okay. It's like, you know, it was a transitional period for you that you've survived. And now, you know, you get to have the opportunity for IVF because you live in the time that you live. You know, you could look at this as a positive and sell it as a positive. I don't want to say sell it, but like, it is a positive, right? Because 50 years ago, this was not an option.
I always tell my patients that I think we're so lucky that we live in a world where we have the science and the medicine and, you know, the access to do things like this.
Right.
You know, like to test the embryos and to prevent your child from having a certain disease if you know, both you and your partner are carriers for it. Or even there are certain like cancer genes that we can pass on and that can be tested for as well. Or to preserve your fertility. You know, there's so many things that we are lucky enough to have access to.
Layla and Lisa, thank you so much for joining me on the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. Where can people find you if they want to learn more information about working with you?
Sure. My website is just fertilitytogether.com, and my Instagram handle is the same, fertilitytogether. And I have all the links to, you know, booking my free intro consults and things like that directly on my website and on my Instagram profile.
Awesome. Thanks, Layla. And Lisa, do you want to share anything?
Sure. My Instagram handle is at LIZLIP23. And I actually work for a pharmacy where it's called Alto Pharmacy. We do fertility medication. We'll help you find, you know, if there are any discount programs you can use or stuff like that. So you can always reach out for some guidance.
That's awesome. I will include all of those links in the episode notes. So if anyone's interested in connecting with Layla or Lisa, please visit these show notes and take it from there. Ladies, again, thank you so much for joining me on the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. And thank you for listening to Ask a Matchmaker. If you'd like to speak to me on an upcoming hotline episode, make sure to follow me on Instagram at Matchmaker Maria. There, on some days, I post the link and we chat on the hotline one-on-one. Until then, you can learn more about what I do or enroll in an upcoming Agape Intensive by visiting agapematch.com/services. Thank you again for listening to Ask a Matchmaker. Be lovable and, more importantly, be likable. See you next week.